This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Selling big cars in small car countries. From Marketplace, I'm Molly Wood, in for David Brancaccio. The eyes of the auto world are in Frankfurt, Germany this week. The world's largest car show is happening there. And thanks to low prices of oil all over the world, car sales are strong in Europe again. That has American automakers pitching bigger cars in Europe than they used to. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has more.
Compared to other global markets, Europe looks pretty good. LBBW auto analyst Frank Bieler is based in Germany.
We are on a growth path right now. And here, Europe can compensate a bit of the weakness, for example, in South America or recently in China.
Europe's tricky, though. The dollar's strength versus the euro is great for American tourists, but rough for American exporters. Also, high fuel taxes mean European drivers pay way more at the pump. That means Detroit's profitable SUVs do much better in Paris, Texas than Paris, France. That's why American automakers are pushing crossovers, which combine SUV and car features. Chris Hobson of IHS Automotive explains the global appeal.
Fuel economy is much better. They are getting a little bit smaller, maybe a bit more adaptable to tighter conditions on European roads.
Europe has largely been a money loser for American car makers since the recession. But now there's new hope that could change. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
And now let's do the numbers. China's Shanghai Composite dropped for another day, closing down more than 3.5%. That dragged down European stocks a bit. London's FTSE 100 was down 0.6%. Germany's DAX was down 0.1%, and the CAC 40 in Paris was up 1/3. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nearly 90 billion pounds of edible food gets thrown away every year. That costs society a lot, in many ways. So on Wednesday in New York, the Obama administration will announce the country's first ever food waste reduction goals. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has more on the cost of wasted food.
Wasted food is an environmental issue. Dana Gunders is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. She says as much as 80% of the water we use goes to growing and transporting our grub.
And so if we don't eat this food, it's a huge waste of those resources.
Plus, Gunder says food that ends up in landfills produces methane. It's a big contributor to global warming. Then there are the economic costs. The average American blows $370 a year by wasting food, according to the USDA. For retailers, the costs of food waste can come in the form of landfill fees. So says David Fikes with the Food Marketing Institute. It's a retail trade group. His group sees a business case for getting stuff to food banks instead of landfills.
In a industry that operates literally on a 1-2% average profit margin, you know, any amount that you can trim and save yourself an expense is always appreciated.
The marketing group is teaming up with food manufacturers, restaurants, and government officials to promote ways to reduce food waste this week. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
It's been a rocky recovery for the housing industry, but things are finally looking up. Even though prices are high, that means fewer people are stuck in homes that are underwater and sales are improving. And a key group of home buyers is finally getting in the mix. Young people who so far haven't been that interested in owning a house. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
I'm visiting Haley Johansson and Marcus Keeneland at their new home, the first they've ever owned, in suburban Portland.
Hello.
You must be Haley.
I'm Mitchell.
Hi.
It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
The couple are in their mid-20s and about to get married, so their hands are full and wallets kind of empty.
This is the living room slash eventual dining room when we can afford a dining room table.
They paid $325,000 for this three-bedroom, two-bath ranch house. Pretty affordable since they're both engineers and a pretty good price in Portland where the market's heating up.
We watched a lot of House Hunters.
You wanted to be on House Hunters.
Yeah, we did.
This is the closest you get. It's public radio.
Yeah, just kind of decided that we really wanted a place of our own and didn't want to keep paying rent. We actually wanted to be putting it into something and make it our own.
We really wanted some land and privacy and get a dog and have outdoor barbecues and hang out.
This American dream, though, has been out of reach for many under 35s since the recession. Their home ownership rate has fallen from 43 to 35%. Now, it's not like they don't want to buy. Fannie Mae recently surveyed young renters and found the vast majority do plan to own eventually. But they face a host of hurdles, strict credit standards and high student debt, which combined with rising rents makes it harder to save for a down payment. For some, there are programs to help. Beth Ann Coldiron is a journalist. Her husband is in the Air Force, which gave them access to a VA loan.
One of the benefits of a VA loan is that you don't have to have a down payment. It would have been pretty hard just because of neither of us make a ton of money.
The Coldirons are buying a two-bedroom house outside San Antonio for $125,000. Economists predict more first-time homebuyers like the Coldirons will soon jump in. The economy's improving, the birth rate is rising, and more young people are finally moving out on their own. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And Miller Coors will shut down its brewery in Eden, North Carolina because of declining sales. The increase in small independent craft brew brands has hurt sales of more mainstream beer. In fact, the number of regional craft and microbreweries has increased nearly 20% in just the last 2 years. But the North Carolina closure will hurt. That brewery employs about 500 people who will all lose their jobs, and it'll cost the town of Eden about $1.5 million in tax revenues. Miller Coors is the second largest beer manufacturer in the U.S. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Beatty Zhang. From the studios at Montclair State University, I'm Molly Wood with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.